Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I am Chad Wesley Smith, joined as always by... It looks like Miraculous Max Montana.
All right.
How you doing, buddy?
We'll go with that one.
That's great.
And we're here in the Dirty Jurors, the Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
Joined by Mr. Zach Evanesh, the underground strength coach. How you doing, my man?
What's up, man?
Good to see you.
Give us some. Bring it in.
So today's episode of The Jug Life is brought to you by Jersey Shore Bros and Kettlebell Rose. It's a lifestyle.
What the
That's a sponsor. You haven't heard of them?
Never.
I think you'd really like them. I feel like you live that lifestyle.
This is like, I can't keep up with like all of the, John Welburn's always like laughs. He goes like, Dallas and Donuts, Dallas and Dildos. It's like, oh, he's like, when will it end?
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll see if I can pick you up a tank top or something for it.
Yeah, I'll represent.
Yeah. So, Zach has been a big influence on me as a young coach and in starting Juggernauts and, going back to probably when I really started to read about this stuff and watch a lot of videos, even, 2004, 2005.
Yeah.
I remember having the underground, strength coach manual.
Yes.
This like kind of spiral notebook thing with a bunch of DVDs and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Coming out here to Jersey to visit you a couple times. You were very much on the forefront of kind of sharing this information, you along with guys like Joe DeFranco, Jay Ferrugia.
Yeah.
It seems like an odd concentration into New York and New Jersey kind of area that you guys were really early into doing all that.
Yep.
And so I want to say, first off, thank you to you for...
It's crazy to hear that all the time.
Helping inspire what we've been able to do with Juggernaut and sharing that information that helps so many young coaches like me and like Max and hundreds of thousands of other ones out there. So thank you. Hopefully it'll make you feel old when I say it too.
It's a reminder of how fast time goes. Cause I look at it kind of like by like the decade, it's like, all right, I'm 42 now. I know I'll hear this story and it just goes fast. I'll be in my, it's just going crazy fast. That's kind of almost the scary thing.
So for those people not familiar with you, can you give a quick rundown about a little bit about your own training background and then creating the Underground Strength Gym?
Yeah, so a big part of my influence, like the background, started from high school wrestling. And this is, got into high school in 89. Back then, there was really no strength and conditioning information. If you were at a gym, and there were some amazing local gyms in my area, the guys were basically bodybuilders, and there was like a select few powerlifters, which I have some great stories about, but I'm talking in a gym of like, probably 200 guys. There's maybe five guys that were powerlifters. So the information for me was kind of like right place, wrong time. None of that strength and conditioning information was out. The magazines were really more about, Arnold and Sly were the movie stars. And they were talking, every training article was like, squeeze the muscle, feel the muscle. You didn't really come across what you needed. So I didn't know. So long story short, trained extremely hard, but trained the wrong way. Led to a lot of injuries with wrestling. And then in my late teens, got like more into bodybuilding. And then as some of the information came out and I amassed more injuries, I started to figure out a way to do research with the internet. And I think my early influences came from Elite FTS. And the way that came about was I was researching who are the best wrestlers in the world and how do they train? And it was the Russians. So by searching that, I came across Russian conjugate method. And I think it was like Tommy Myslinski, Milo, who had written his thesis about that. Guys on the Q&A were like, Elite FTS Q&A were Joe Ken, Jim Wendler, Dave, of course, Milo, Buddy Morris, and basically there wasn't so much information where I could get lost.
You're revealing some of their identities. That was Coach X.
Yes, Coach X, 62. Yeah,
Coach H, Coach X.
In fact, when I first had a phone call with Buddy, I said, thanks for taking the phone call, Coach X.
And, this reference is probably lost on 95% of our... But the people who know are really going to appreciate it.
So it's all right, so it's 2018. We're looking at maybe 2004, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, these were the Q&A guys that couldn't reveal their identities because of NCAA regulations, and I guess with the pros. And I think it added a mystique.
Yeah.
You know, Mark Bell was jackass.
So, well, still is.
Still. Yeah. So long story from there is, you know, I had been training since 1989. And as I got out of college, became a teacher. And then during the summertime, it was like, what do you do? What do you do in the summer? Well, I got to find another job. There's no word that I had heard that you're a strength coach. So I was like, I'm going to become a personal trainer. So I bought books on how to be a personal trainer. And the first job I applied to was at Spa Lady. Swear, true.
Sounds like your style. Is this like a curves? Well,
it was a curves. And my gut instinct was just my heart was dying as I did it. But I was like, shit, I need money. I don't have money. I'm in debt. And I need to get a job. And I remember I lived up in Central Jersey. And we're down here at the beach. I'm with my girlfriend at the time, now married. But I remember the manager called me to tell me I've got the job, and I'm walking on the boardwalk, and I say, "Oh, I hate to disappoint you. I took another job, and I'm lying. I'm straight lying." And in my heart is like, "Oh man, turn it down. You cannot do that. You will not be able to look yourself in the mirror if you take this job." And she's like, "Oh my God, like you said you wanted this job, now you've got another job." And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm sorry. This, you know, I didn't hear back from you." It was like 3 days.
Yeah.
I said I took a job.
You're just a man in demand.
Yes.
You know, they can't blame you for that.
It was, that was actually the beginning of me saying, you gotta listen and trust your gut instincts. So I started training a local kid in my neighborhood out of my parents' garage. And the way we acquired the equipment was, I said, "Kurt, I saw equipment for sale out of a Gold's Gym that moved. If you borrow your dad's truck, I'll train you for free all summer." So he's like, "Okay." We borrow his dad's truck, and we go to, they're storing it at a guy's barn. So we go to his house, travel down a little like dirt road, and then he's got a huge house, big like a barn. Pond, there's horses, there's like animals roaming everywhere. He opens up the barn and there's like an old hot rod in there. There's Ivanko plates piled up against the wall. There's chickens and it's like, I was like, holy shit. Like I could train people right in this garage. It would be like Rocky IV in the garage.
I got chickens to chase. I got weights to lift.
Yeah, everything. So I bought something like 20 45s, 20 35s, 20 25s. I bought a chin and dip bar. And I think from another newspaper classified ad, I picked up just a flat utility bench and a pair of 50 and 100 pound dumbbells. And that was out of Newark. And the story with that was Newark is a pretty dangerous place. So I was like, all right, I'll put some money in my underwear, some money in my sock, some money in this pocket. If anybody jumps me, they ain't getting all my money. Like you might get like 60 bucks depending on what happens here. So to get those weights, I remember the guy, I mean, this was like early days sell. He may have been on like a walkie-talkie, and he's like communicating with the other guy. And I think the conversation was something like, is he jacked or is he big? And I was like, damn, they're thinking they're going to jump me. They're going to jump me. And I had like the whole gray sweatpants going on. I think at the time I was like 230. I was buying equipment really that I didn't need. Like I bought 20 45s, 20 35s. Think about that.
Well, no one needs 35s.
Nobody needs 35s, right. But I had to have them.
New gym owner lesson, don't buy 35s. Yeah.
There's no 30. There's no 35s in this gym, but I had to have them. So from that guy, I bought a pair of 50s and 100s, and I bought like an upright squat stand off of New York barbells.
I remember them.
Yes. I don't know if there's, I think they're still around.
They probably have like a color ad in the back of some, you know, NCAA journal or something, right?
110 bucks. And I started training that one kid. with basics, squats, you know, benching. I don't even think I was doing farmer walks, but in my backyard, my parents had like this two-level backyard and it had like stones. So I was kind of pulling things from what I saw in Rocky III and Rocky IV. Early days World's Strongest Man that I saw from the early 80s. You'd see guys lifting stones. I had them like chopping wood. I would put a towel around a tree branch doing pull-ups.
I remember these videos and stuff very, very
I didn't have videos of that because that was from, that's past. So this is from my parents' backyard.
Well, I definitely remember stuff of people carrying rocks and shit.
It may have even been
sequence photos of it, not even videos.
Yeah.
Maybe cave paintings of
the hieroglyphics.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was the beginning. I trained the kid for free. I trained another wrestler because I was coaching wrestling, and he moved to the high school, and I said, dude, I saw you working out at the local gym, and he was doing, like, rope pushdowns. He was just doing, like, things that I used to do, and I said, that ain't going to get you tough. That's not going to get you strong. You got to train with me. So those early days started at my parents' garage. Then the first house we bought, my wife and I, we were just engaged. We weren't even married. So that's pretty ballsy, right? You buy a house before you're even married.
Yeah.
The first thing we revamped was the two-car garage. And so I was training guys out of the two-car garage for probably a year or 14 months before we even moved into the house. And I would train them in the garage, train them in the backyard with a tree that we cut down, tree logs. I had a Home Depot rope slung over a tree, which I clearly remember almost like losing my eye because I attached a chain to it and I was throwing it over the branch for like 45 minutes. I thought I was gonna, my shoulder was dead. I remember it would like come down and almost hit my eye. Finally, I got it hooked. So the guys would train in the garage and I just accumulated and made my own stuff. I made sandbags, kegs. I went to like the local liquor store and I still remember asking the guy, you know, I need a keg, and let me preface this, like, I'm going to pay you the $20 or whatever it is, but I'm using it for strongman training. You ever see World's Strongest Man? And they're like, no. They were looking at me like, nah, dude, we don't do that. And I think I got to, like, the third liquor store where I was like, I need this keg. Like, I need you to get me this keg. Finally, so the guy caved in. So I accumulated used equipment. Basically, I had, like, a little studio in the garage. So they would train about 20 minutes in the garage, 20 minutes in the backyard, then we'd put stuff in the back of my truck, go down the street to the elementary school, which was perfect. We had a long stretch of grass for sleds that my dad welded for me. We had a short hill for sprinting. Kids would push my truck across the parking lot, and then there was the playground. Pull-ups, pressing the picnic table, split squats. I just destroyed them, and they got better from it. And we trained in the heat, in the cold. And that started, we moved into that house in 04. So around 2003 is when I was training out of that house. 01, 02 out of my parents. And I stayed in the garage for about 4 years. 2007, I opened the first warehouse, which you visited, which was it's probably like the most notoriously well-known.
Yeah.
The graffiti everywhere. The Ultimate Warrior had been there. It was just a tough-ass place. And I also think, you know, I know some of the questions are about kids and how they should train, but there has been a de-evolution of kids, of humans in general, but kids especially, meaning when I first started training kids, they could do pull-ups, they could do push-ups, they could squat. There was no, you know, maybe I didn't know, but I don't recall like, oh shit, this kid needs ankle mobility or he needs hip mobility.
Yeah.
We just fucking trained and that's what they got better. Now, you know, or even like every 3 years, 2 years, kids show up weaker and weaker, not just physically, but emotionally. They're scared. You know, you guys mentioned the gym name. It was like, what are they called? Like
Murder of Crows.
Murderer of Crows?
Murder of Crows, like it's a group of crows. I would say that's like the biggest hipster gym ever.
Okay, Murder of Crows. Well, you know, what I hear all the time is they're intimidated to come to the gym. I wish when I was in high school, I had a place like this to mold me and have to be around other guys to mentor me and train me. You know, what I had in high school was bodybuilders. And although those guys were very strong, nobody was like, hey man, you're wrestling. you need to deadlift. I don't recall even reading about a deadlift in Flex magazine or Muscle and Fitness, but the guys that powerlifted, they had their own special squat rack near the back of the gym. And what I had heard when I explained the story is this was outlined in, I think, Powerlifting USA in the 80s, how to build your own platform. They basically took two car tires, stacked them all up, put them together, framed them out so it was about this high off the floor. And then there was just the squat cage. And you didn't go on that platform unless you were invited. Even if those guys weren't there, you stayed away from it, you know? And I had seen guys, you know, back then, you're like, oh, shit, guys benching with bench shirts. You're thinking, what the hell is that stupid shit, you know?
Still to this day, you think that.
You still think that. It's back to thinking that way. But I had seen guys squatting 5-6 plates on there. But there was bodybuilders benching 315 on the incline. Or, you know, we had dumbbells up to 180 at that gym. But nobody was like, Zach, you need to do hang. You never saw somebody do weightlifting or power cleans. And kind of that's the tough thing is like kids need those mentors because at this level for high school, unless we're in, you know, the Carolinas, Florida, Texas, Georgia, I think those areas are doing a pretty good job of getting qualified strength coaches to coach at the high school level.
Yeah.
At this, in this area, New Jersey and many other states, you don't really have that. And I had this conversation with Shane Sweat, and he's like, look, all the respect in the world for a coach who's volunteering his time in the weight room, which you never really volunteer. You're getting paid for it. You're running the weight room. I used to teach in the schools. But he goes, there's no way that that guy is going to have the expertise that somebody has who's coaching all day, who does that as his actual career. So kids nowadays are showing up basically weaker and weaker, less and less capable, more further behind the eight ball, not just at this high school level, but at the collegiate level. Mm. So 3 years ago, I was at Lehigh. For the past year and a half, I'm at Rutgers. And all those new kids coming in, even the experienced kids, have to be taught how to set your back on a trap bar deadlift, how to do a full range push-up, you know, stuff that we should know in second grade. So there's, you know, a lot of unique intricacies to being this kind of independent gym owner. So where I'm at now is this location in Manasquan, another location in like central/North Jersey, Scotch Plains. And at one point I had four spots. I had like a satellite location and a baseball facility. I had that one spot that you were at. And because the reason why that shit was going on was I found that people were in this like Amazon.com era, meaning if I can't get it discounted or if I can't get it close and quick and 5 minutes away, people don't want to do it. And when I find somebody who's willing to travel and fight for what they want, whether it's an athlete, a parent of an athlete, or you guys probably have interns at your gym, right?
Yeah, we've done a few of those.
Right. So there's a almost like a level of their hunger that's going to determine the outcome. Who's willing to fight for it, you know?
Yeah, we were just talking with Mike Rodengo earlier today about that exact thing when he went to intern at Pitt.
Yeah.
Yeah, that he's sleeping on an air mattress, working 14 hours a day for free, but he doesn't think of it as working for free. He's learning for 14 hours a day.
Yeah.
He gets to do it. Like they're not making him pay
to
do it.
Yeah. Excited that they're not kicking him out, right? Yeah.
So success is no accident, right? Look at that. I mean, he was out of college. He had been, I think, already worked at Joe DeFranco's gym, and he's going to kind of create this foundation for himself of being mentored and interned of some of our most, you know, genius guys in the industry.
Yeah.
I've, you know, ironically, whether it's an athlete, whether it's an intern, I've come to this conclusion, like if the coach is more motivated than you are, you can't. I need you to outwork me. I need you to out everything me. One interesting thing I tell the younger guys is I go, guys, I'm not telling you don't party. Because when I was in my early 20s, I worked at a fitness center connected to a hospital. And we would work 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. And we had the hospital employees coming in, adults came in, adults brought their kids in, and we would have to train them. So in my early 20s, we'd go to the city. You leave your house at like midnight, maybe 11 a.m. You party till 5. Then you go to a diner, eat at 6 till 7. Then we go and worked 8 to 4. So when I tell the coaches, I go, guys, how do you miss a 9 a.m. session when we're just training at 9 a.m.?
Yeah.
If you can't outwork me, at least try to out-party me when I was young. Like, out-something me. But I think when I look at, you know, the training, and I know we're kind of bouncing around a little bit, I look at all those experiences and I say, man, I just got to build tougher, more resilient kids. And then, you know, I have my own kids. So there's that battle of like, how do you not draw the line from coach to father? Mm-hmm. And like I told my wife, I was like, our kids need to fucking walk to school. And, you know, we're like, God forbid, it would take them like 6 minutes. But my wife's like, no way. Like, this town is like so, I'm like, Danielle, don't worry. Like, these kids can run. They could run away, and there's people everywhere. But I think we shelter people. For example, some of the kids that train here could walk here within minutes, but they get dropped off consistently. So when I look back at the old training, I long for that because it was so imperfect, which I believe is what made it so powerful. Training outside, whether it was hot or cold. Training with me not having the knowledge I do now, because sometimes you pass that knowledge to the kids, then they think too much. For example, a couple of years ago, I had some real high-level wrestlers here, and they're like, should I deload today? Why we deload? I have an all-star match this weekend. You have one match that's like 6 minutes, and we're deloading? It's Tuesday. No, we're not going to deload. Or I jumped rope today for school. My legs are killing me. Can we not do legs? Well, you tell me, is that, if your legs are sore, do we just not do the legs? Is that good? I don't know. I think so. Okay. Come back, dude. Come back next time then. So in my early days, I used to kick people out much faster. Now I give them more time to turn the corner. And I explain that to the coaches. I go, guys, these kids are not beasts. Otherwise, they wouldn't have to come here. We have to build them into the beast. So I have to explain that to my coaches because they haven't been around. I've been around kids since I got out of college, from teaching to coaching. So I started teaching in when I graduated in the winter, you know, December 97. So January 98, I started teaching. So I've kind of seen that de-evolution of kids and what they're capable of doing. And our best kids did this. They'd lift at school, you know, mandatory weight room. Then they'd come and train out of the garage, which was brutal workouts. And then after that, they'd go play like pickup basketball. And that was their speed and agility work. Or they'd do extra calisthenics. They did extra on their own. Whereas if I say to a kid now, listen, you don't need me to get you better at push-ups. There's no way you should be struggling to do 6 or 10 push-ups for 6 months. You should be, you know, destroying that shit at home. But that's where we're at, you know, because I think we're as a society in teaching and the schools, we're afraid to push. Even athletic directors have said that to me. They go, Zach, look, guy like you is a little too intense, you know, because then we got to deal with the backlash of parents and the, you know, legal issues. Like, they'll sue you. I will sue you for making my son tough and strong. Scary.
All right, so I want to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with Zach Evanesh to talk more about developing GPP and being able to take some of these soft kids he's dealing with and get them to where they can really handle some hard training, because I think that's going to have application, you know, people of all ages, because with CrossFit and stuff being so big and people later in their life getting into fitness, this developing work capacity, if you've been just sitting at a desk for the last 10 years, is also going to be a big thing.
Yep.
And how he creates a gym culture to push this as well. So we'll be back with Zach Evanesh on The Jug Life.
Guys, your bathroom called? It's time to give it the cleaning it deserves. Get rid of all that junk that's lying around. Freshen it up with high-quality products from Dollar Shave Club. Members get everything they need for their morning routine delivered right to their door. Dollar Shave Club is more than just razors, and it's way better than going to the store and buying expensive razors. They have everything you need: razors, shave butter, shampoo, body wash, toothpaste, everything you need to look, smell, and feel your best. Even though I have a beard, I can still use the high quality razors from Dollar Shave Club, the Executive Razor, the best razor I've ever used to clean up my neck, clean up the cheeks, and their Dr. Carver's Shave Butter is fantastic. It goes on clear so you can see where you're shaving. And since Dollar Shave Club delivers everything to you, you don't have to set foot in a store, wandering the sales aisles, hunting for razors, shampoo, body wash, toothpaste, none of it. Clean up your bathroom and your morning routine. Join Dollar Shave Club today, and for just $5 with free shipping, you'll get the 6-blade Executive Razor Plus trial sizes of shave butter, body cleanser, and one wipe Charlie's. Then keep the blades coming for a few bucks more a month. Get yours at dollarshaveclub.com/juglife. That's dollarshaveclub.com/juglife.
All right, we're back on the Jug Life at the Underground Strength Gym in Manasquan, New Jersey, with Zach Evanesh, the Underground Strength Coach. And we're talking to Zach about, you know, wrestlers are probably the biggest population that you train. And,
yep.
And, you know, wrestlers are some of the craziest motherfuckers ever.
They're crazy. Like,
and, and it's one of just the grittiest, toughest sports that there could be. But you're talking about, you know, that a lot of these younger guys, they're not the grittiest, toughest guys like the wrestlers you grew up with and earlier in your training. And I know that you do a great job of developing a culture and, you know, expectations in your gym to make them rise to that. Can you talk a little bit about the how you create a tough, you know, hardworking culture in your gym?
Right. So the culture and the atmosphere and the environment was really bred into me in my earliest years of training. So that first gym that I trained at was like 7,500 square feet, and the owner welded everything. And I remember being scared to go there. You know, I started training at the YMCA, and when I got there, I understood why environment was so crucial. And I had even read about that in Arnold's Encyclopedia of Modern Bodybuilding. He spoke about the importance of your training partners, the importance of, you know, training at Gold's Gym or World Gym and the environment inspiring you to work harder. So I always connected to the loud music, great training partners, and I carried that with me when I left kind of going to gyms and training out of my garage. So I found that if you, you know, raise the standard, then people will level up to it. I think we underestimate what kids are capable of doing, what adults are capable of doing, what humans are capable of doing in general. So we underestimate how capable they are in the way that, like, you know, a dad will say, is it okay for him to train here? He's got basketball practice later today or tomorrow. And I'll say, hey, you know, Mr. Smith, do you remember when you played football in high school? Yeah. Do you remember how you practiced Monday through Saturday? Yeah. Well, there you go. You ran 6 days in a row, and your legs were fine, and you were good. Or when you wanted to get better at baseball, you and your friends played outside for 5 hours, 8 hours. Nobody blew out their UCL. You were all good, right? Nobody was worried about Tommy John surgery. We just played. Well, that's what we're going to do with your son. That's what we're going to do with your daughter. We're just going to train. And I borrowed a couple things. So I looked at, when I was a teacher, how we had kind of like the lessons to develop the first and second graders, then the third through fifth graders, then the middle school kids, then the high school kids. So I looked at progressions and regressions, and I applied it to the training. Then I heard Buddy Morris say something so simple, which has stuck with me since day one. He goes, when you're teaching beginners, and he said, a beginner lifter is not, you know, an advanced athlete is not an advanced lifter. And you guys would know this, mm-hmm. right? We know that, meaning I've seen gold medalists in different sports have no clue how to lift.
Yeah, so we're talking, you know, an advanced football player, wrestler, basketball player,
yeah,
that even though they're great at the sport, if you've seen a video of Usain Bolt doing power cleans, you know exactly what we're talking about. They're not advanced lifters compared to high-level weightlifters and power
Correct.
Lifters.
Yeah. So he said, it's got to be easy to teach on your end, easy for them to learn, and basically I looked at it like, oh, we need like a high return of investment from an exercise. Because when I started, and I started coming across all these, you know, crazy training methodologies, I felt like I was an outcast for doing things like, I focused on three things: calisthenics of all types, carries of all types, whether it was with kettlebells, sandbags, kegs, stones, and sleds. You just can't mess up sleds. And I found that by doing those things and mixing up the sets and the reps and giving some small variety into it, in like 3, 4, 5 weeks, you have such a transformed individual, whether it's young or an adult or a varied sport. So we have swimmers, fencer, soccer, baseball, football, you name it. And I just found that intro area is crucial versus me trying to teach you the clean, clean. You know,
you think a lot of those, I mean, those, all that range of things, calisthenics, carries, those things are inherently like hard. It kind of also builds that sort of toughness to kind of just sort of gut it out. And like, you know, you have to just get this stuff done. Whereas it's easy to, for someone to like try and teach them a clean and have like a real complex progression. But
right. So, I'll say this, I'm not even in the beginning trying to get people tough anymore, because I found that, like, you know, our perception of tough is I'm getting them to believe in themselves.
Yeah.
What I mean is, like, the kids that come in here, they could barely look you in the eye.
I have really pretty eyes, so sometimes
it's beautiful eyes.
It's tough. People, they don't want to get lost, so they have to kind of look away.
But these kids, like, when they talk to you, they'll kind of like mumble and look away. And that's why you hear me talk about the strong life or training for life. Once you get an athlete, you're almost tricking them into having fun and believing in themselves. So when we're training, the atmosphere has to be electric. And if it's much easier when it's pumping. Like yesterday, we had like 15 kids in here. Mm-hmm. But when you got like two kids, then you got to bring that energy, which is tough as a coach, I'll tell you that. But in the beginning, it's like you're building their confidence. And it's a slow ramp up, whereas in the early days, maybe because I didn't know, and I was, you know, you're less knowledgeable, which I think was a good thing. You know, I was just hammering people from the gate, but you know what, that was like a that was their trial. The trial was legitimately, if you give up or quit, you ain't coming back. And their father knew, their dad knew that if their son quit during the workout, they ain't coming back. So an intro workout used to be like four sets of hand walking with pull-ups, you know, power cleans, which always made people throw up, power clean with a sandbag, just like throwing it on your shoulder, catching it. Then it would be something like chain push-ups and pull-aparts. Most people were used to doing, do a set, rest. All of a sudden they're doing chain push-ups and pull-aparts, and they're doing, you know, like 60, 70 reps nonstop. Then sleds. I mean, I remember some of the stories of like kids would just walk out in the garage, go next to the auto garage and like throw up and come back in and train.
Auto garage probably loves you.
The auto garage. Yeah. I remember he said to me, we had this Italian kid and he'd always throw up Italian food, and like the stray cats would either eat the food or like the fucking birds were like eating his
meatballs,
shrimp,
and cannolis. Yeah,
Jimmy threw up a fucking stromboli again.
It was always like these like Italian food. So like the cats awesome. And the birds, I remember, were like eating whatever it was, calamari, shrimp, all that stuff. So I remember the auto garage guy was like, he's like, Zach, you gotta tell these kids to throw up somewhere else. Now
I like how he didn't even tell you to stop. Just, you're gonna throw up. Yeah. I mean, that's not gonna stop. Like, just do it somewhere else.
And you know what's interesting is I look at, if I, you know, kind of take that to another angle, is like we look at, you know, football players who get rhabdo because they did, I don't know, 10 sets of 10 squats at 225. And I always say to myself, well, when I was 14, I think I did 50 sets of squats.
Yeah.
Because my dad, we were going to Israel and I knew there was no gym. So I was like, I need to do 50 sets of squats to make up for the 3 weeks I'll be gone. I was fine, you know? So you have to understand that kids are different now. But atmosphere is crucial. You got to have an extremely uplifting, positive place. There certainly has to be times where you got to tell somebody, hey, you're not cutting it. And I want to give another, you know, example. There was a kid here that trained with his friends. They had been training for a year, year and a half. And they were middle school kids. And they were started at middle school and they were probably beginning of high school at the time. And doing the calisthenics, the carries, the sleds, a lot of dumbbell benching, dumbbell clean and press, basics. His friends were just ahead of him. You know, they were back squatting, box squatting, trap bar deadlifting. And I said, dude, you've been here for too long. And every time you lift up kettlebells, you're round backing, you're still struggling on push-ups. And I go, the reason you're not getting better is you don't want it. I go, you don't want it, dude. You don't want to be great, let alone good. And then I think I was like, you need to tell me if you want to be here and you want to do this. And he's getting teary-eyed and crying. I said, don't cry. I go, you got to decide, you know, how great you want to become. I said, go outside, clear the tears out of your eyes and come back in, because I'm not going to keep training you for over a year where we can't do push-ups. Because what I say earlier, you don't need a strength coach to do push-ups,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
What do we do when we're young? You know how to do push-ups, curls, and run. And these kids don't do that stuff. In fact, high school kids can't jump rope, which makes me mad, because I'm like, what? Why?
You know, they're not allowed to, or they can't?
They just don't. They can't, meaning if a phys ed teacher
the rope
should,
is triggering
right,
some.
The phys ed teacher has to really step it up, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So this kid, I said, when he came in, I go, I said, you know what your middle name is? Squats. I go, I'm fucking squatting you every day. And meaning I broke the rule of wait till he shows he's prepared, wait till he's got the muscle. I was like, dude, I'm going to fucking make you, you know, elevate your game. And I remember we squatted with the bar, and it looked so crappy. We did box squats. His, like, you know, ankle would be out. I mean, things that you'd be like, how the fuck does the human body, like, deform itself at such a young age? I'm in my brain, I'm like, if I had, like, Kelly Starrett in my pocket, he wouldn't even be able to help me with this kid. And I said, I think we squatted for the full hour, two reps at a time, 45 pounds. Then the next week, 55 pounds. He would squat, do some push-ups, do some carries. Then with, like, 15 minutes left, I'd say, okay, you're going to dumbbell bench, you're going to curl, and you're going to drag sleds and do back extensions. But I started making him squat, and they looked ugly. And if you would seen it on video, you know, YouTube would have sued me. The internet would have sued me. They'd be like, what the hell is that? But I knew that I had to force his muscles to wake up. I couldn't keep doing a kettlebell goblet squat with 26 pounds. Eventually, he started box squatting. He got up to like 135, 155. And by forcing him to get under a bar, we got there with imperfect technique. It was not perfect. And I think as a coach, you got to learn that certain athletes are just never going to move great. They might just get to good. And does every kid survive here or last? No, because not every kid wants it. And really, we train, most of these kids are here 2 to 3 days a week. But believe it or not, that's the toughest thing, is finding somebody who's got the consistency and the parents who are willing to. I just put this video out. I said, who's training your child? You know, your most prized possession. You go to an expert doctor, an expert dentist. But when it comes to the strength coach, the human body, a very complex machine, You're wondering, what's the price? What's the discount? Who's closer to home? And me as a coach, it's almost like kind of bad, because when I watch somebody coaching my kids, I'm like, oh, that motherfucker's on his phone. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to talk to him. He just checked his phone. Like, I want greatness. I want energy. And that's what inspires kids, because they're in a world where they're uninspired. They're not being inspired in school. And the coaches are afraid to say what they need to say or want to say, because they'll lose their job. So this has always been a place where, you know, we could break those quote unquote rules and truly build you to what you can become. So, you know, those things, those carries, calisthenics, sleds, don't take a lot of skill. You could vary them up in many ways, whether it's sets, reps, loading positions. And I think it's great for when we train adults, that's how I begin them.
And I think you can make real simple progressions with it too. It doesn't have to be this fancy loading strategy. Like this week you did 5 times down and back. Next week you do 6 times down and back, and 7 times down and back.
Simple.
Yeah.
Simple. And you and I had that conversation, you know, some years ago. We were talking about, you know, what are the best athletes doing? I had maybe mentioned some sort of a new program out there. And you were like, Zach, let's look at the best football players, the best track and field runners. They squat, they clean, they sprint, they jump. Like, I always say, the basics will never let you down. But there's a psychology involved. So if you don't believe in those basics, if you believe in the fads and gimmicks, then you will never get strong, because you don't believe in it. So if you believe in, you know, there's trainers out there that say, don't lift weights, only do speed work. Well, I've seen those guys perform, and I've seen what happens when they compete against a stronger individual. Your speed and flashy shit gets completely shut down. And strong is like, you have to be strong. There has to be an obsession mentally and emotionally about, I hate being weak, or I want to get better. And without that, whether you're a sport, you know, a sport athlete or a weightlifter, if you don't have that obsession, then you will limit your potential.
I think perfect place to end it there. Zach Evanesh, an incredibly passionate about what he does. I mean, the most grassroots gym success story possible from the fucking
parents' backyard.
Yeah, from the parents' backyard, yeah. Making his own equipment.
It's crazy.
To having four gyms, to being, you know, world known around the world for doing this stuff and just still kicking ass with the basics. Zach, where can people find you to learn more about you?
ZachEvanesh.com, Strong Life Podcast, and UndergroundStrengthCoach.com. That's the membership site I've had since 2005.
I know, you're an OG of that kind of stuff.
And yeah.
We'll have to come and talk to you another time about all that stuff. But this was the Jug Life Podcast. If you liked it, go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review. That's going to help more people find this good information. If you like the podcast, write us something funny or nice, like Captain Backflip, who says, "The Jug Life is an incredible podcast, best supersetted with the World's Strongest Hipster playlist." Yeah. You can follow that on my Spotify. "The World's Strongest Podcast continually provides high-quality info and amusement from the extremely talented CWS and the merciless Max Montana. I highly recommend this as a weightlifter and a student of exercise science. It's an extremely helpful resource to anyone in the fitness industry. I do not recommend watching the videos on YouTube as much, as I believe most watchers just stare into the abyss of CWS's hypnotic eyes the entire time and miss all the information." Like I told you.
Those blue eyes.
They'll get you.
Baby blues.
They'll get you. So Captain Backflip, shoot me an email, chad@jtsstrength.com, and I'll send you out a gift certificate or a shirt or something. Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube. 3 videos per week, thanks to the world's strongest videographer, Shorty Sedang. If you're interested in online coaching for powerlifting, weightlifting, super total, power building, and strongman, visit juggernautcoaching.com. You can find The Jug Life on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and thejuglife.com.
Is that it?
Next events. we'll be back here in the greater New York area.
Long Island?
Yeah.
Long Island. It's August.
August 19th, Long Island, Max, myself, Dr. Mike Isretel, Dr. Quinn Hennock, and Dr. James Hoffman, covering technique, program design, nutrition, recovery, and mobility, all in one very information-packed day. That's the 2018 Juggernaut Performance Summit. You can also get some CEUs for your NSCA stuff if you need those. So go ahead and check that out. Max, where can they find you?
You can find me, Max_Ada on Instagram, Facebook, or you can email me if you have any questions, max@jtsstrength.com.
And I'm Chad Wesley Smith, @ChadWesleySmith and @JuggernautTraining on Facebook and Instagram, filling up your newsfeed all day. Thank you to Mr. Zach Evanesh.
Thanks, guys.
Go check out his
stuff.
Thank you. And we'll see you next week.